Hello, and welcome to The Neighbor Next Door, a podcast about the power and importance of neighboring. I'm your host, Matthew Johnson, and as usual, I am joined on the virtual front porch by my colleague in neighboring, Adam Barlow Thompson.
Hey, good neighbors. Welcome to the podcast. We are excited today to introduce a guest that we have with us named David Burton. And one of the things that David is best known for within the neighboring movement team is that I would say like probably more people have found us because of David than probably anybody else. Constantly, people are like, yeah, I heard about you from this guy in Missouri who was doing something. And so we owe David lots of gratitude, and we are excited to say welcome to the virtual front porch, David Burton.
Well, it is great to be here and to visit in person. And I didn't know that part of it, so that's cool. I try to be a connector for people, so glad to hear that's happening.
Yeah, we've had some people who live in Wichita and found out about us through you, which is
wow, that's
crazy.
Awesome. Yeah.
Like they watch one of your webinars and then we're like, I should check those people out. We're in the same town. So it's pretty cool.
Well, us neighboring aficionados have to stick together, right?
That's right. Well, David, why don't you kind of introduce yourself a little bit? Who are you and why is this neighboring thing a part of your world?
Sure. Well, I work with the University of Missouri, University of Missouri Extension to be exact, and I've been there 20 years working in community development. I live down in the Springfield, Missouri area, and I've lived in this area my entire life. And so I kind of understand the culture here and things, but you know, I would have told you 3 years ago that I was a model neighbor. I didn't throw loud parties. I rake and chop up my leaves. I take down my Christmas lights right after Christmas. I pick up after my dog when I take him on a walk. I wave at you in the morning if you're leaving in your car. I'm a model neighbor, or so I thought. And I guess I should back up a little bit. When, you know, I grew up in a small town of Ash Grove, population 1,200. Where you knew everybody and you didn't know street names, but you knew where everybody lived. And at that time, 40 years ago, it was a lot like growing up in Mayberry. And I can still remember when the doorbell would ring, you know, my brother and I we'd jump up from where we were at and come sliding across the floor in our sock feet to the front door to see who it was, because that meant we had a visitor. And this was exciting because people just dropped in, you know, neighbors would ring the doorbell or other relatives coming through the area would just stop and ring the doorbell and we'd run and see who it was. And that was always a time of excitement. I know mom always had something, a baked good in the kitchen that was under glass that we had strict instructions never to touch. That was always there for the visitor that came or the neighbors that came over to talk, you know. And so they'd come into the kitchen, she'd get the pound cake out from under the glass and say, here, you know, do you want a cup of Sanka? Something like that. You know, that's 40 years ago.
Yeah.
That was my experience growing up. And then just at some point just kind of dawned on me that the contrast to today was so dramatic. I mean, when our doorbell goes off, we all hit the ground and turn off the lights. We would army crawl to the door to see if it's a UPS delivery or maybe someone selling Girl Scout cookies. But otherwise, you know, you didn't even answer the door. If it was a relative, you'd crack the door while my wife would go and clean up the bathrooms real quick, you know, and straighten things up before we would let them into the house. That was kind of how we answered the doorbell around our place here. And that's just kind of, wow, isn't that a 180 degree difference from how I grew up, the way we respond to that doorbell? And I used to think, wow, we've got a doorbell problem. But I came to realize we've got a neighboring problem. Our church decided to add the word neighbor to our mission statement. And I remember our pastor giving that sermon, that's been about 3 years ago now. And I sang through that sermon about what it meant to be a good neighbor. And I remember, you know, literally sitting there in the pew thinking, I got this. This doesn't really apply to me. I'm already a great neighbor. Golly. For all the reasons I mentioned earlier, right? And we left on vacation the next day to go to Colorado Springs to visit my sister-in-law, Cindy. She works at a church in Colorado, Pulpit Rock is the name of the church. And we went with her to a service, and lo and behold, their theme for the year was love your neighbor. Mm. And so I'm old enough now to know the Holy Spirit can prompt in different ways. So I've got two neighboring sermons here back to back. I'm thinking, maybe I should pay attention. And then one of her coworkers gave me a book. She had, I guess, mentioned to him that I like to read. And he said, this is written by a guy I know that lives here close. And he handed me a copy of The Art of Neighboring by Dave Runyon. Mm-hmm. Dave Runyon and Jay Paddock. And for me, that's kind of like the seminal book on neighboring. It has such practical application. And well, I listen to books a lot on Audible. So knowing that I had Kansas to drive back across, no offense to you guys, I turned on Audible and listened to that book across Kansas. And I wasn't even done with the first chapter yet. And I realized I'm a stinky neighbor. Mm. I thought I was neighboring, but man, over the years, as our kids had grown, we'd stopped playing in the front yard with them. Neighbors had sold houses, come and gone. And I realized, man, I really only know the names of one of my neighbors out of eight, because people had moved and we just didn't have as much interaction with them. Mm-hmm. And I was really convicted after reading that book that we needed to do better. We were called to do better, and we were really missing the mark by not knowing the names of our neighbors at a minimum, right? Mm-hmm. That's where it all begins. And I have a good friend here in Springfield, Missouri, that's always saying, eat crow while it's young and tender. And going over to neighbors that have lived across the street for 3 years and you don't even know their name, that involves eating some crow, as the saying goes. Now, they've been there 3 years, so it's not really young and tender anymore. But we took plates of cookies and a little sheet about our family and all of my contact information, every possible way you would need to get a hold of me. And just said, man, we've not done a really good job of neighboring. Mm-hmm. And we want to introduce ourselves. We want to do a better job. And, you know, when they would tell us their name, we immediately did what was in that Art of Neighboring book. You know, we wrote down the names in the square that related to where their house was to ours, and put it up on the refrigerator so we could remember those names. And for us, that just made a world of difference in our own immediate quality of life. We had, we sometimes called it prospecting. We discovered we had this gold mine right around us, of different people and skills and experiences, and a three-time Purple Heart recipient, and just things we did not even realize. And even from a practical standpoint, in getting to know our neighbors and understanding their story having interaction, developing this relationship, my wife back in March was diagnosed with cancer. It was thyroid cancer. She's cancer-free now. Mm. But we knew when we got that diagnosis, because we had been neighboring our immediate response was to think, wow, we have two women that are neighbors that have had cancer, that have battled cancer. They could be your support network. And they were. So women, neighbors that we didn't even know the name of, suddenly became an important support network for her. Not just a meal after a surgery, but just support for someone to talk to that had been through something similar. So their neighbors can help you emotionally in that way. And then sometimes we just, you know, pull into the garage and shut the door and isolate ourselves. Over time, it can become, you can feel a little lonely or isolated, and we kind of do that to ourselves. And we just realized, wow, one of the best responses to our feelings of loneliness are just right across the street.
Yeah.
And they, and many of our neighbors have felt felt the same way. They have, you know, they've embraced that idea of relationship. Every one of our neighbors responded so graciously when we came over with cookies and said, man, we've not been very good neighbors. No one rubbed it in. None of them remind us of that or anything. They've all been, you know, very gracious about that. And we have seen in doing that ourselves, that has been an example, has been an encouragement to our neighbors to then begin to know the eight people that live around them. We've seen this kind of trickle and spread down the street. And some neighbors that have formed tremendously strong friendships, whereas a few years ago, didn't even speak. It has changed the dynamics on our street, especially on a Saturday when people are out. We've had lots of conversations about neighboring post-COVID. One of our neighbors has started a women's book club. We've had a couple of cleanup work days that were initiated by another neighbor because of these efforts. We did a lot of what we called front yard Fridays, front yard living during COVID, just lawn chair and supper on the driveway. And it was amazing how many neighbors would just stop to visit. And that's all a part of, you know, developing those relationships. And it's now kind of a thing in our neighborhood. We do first Friday, front yard Fridays. It's kind of a mouthful. But just an excuse to kind of be available. And you have to do that. You have to make yourself available. You do have to, I sometimes jokingly say, but I guess maybe sometimes jokes have an element of truth, right? You do have to turn off Netflix and get up off the couch. And going to your front yard is one of the best things you can do. Just the making yourself available.
I love though that your journey, like you took the message personal, and you didn't, it wasn't an academic pursuit for you. It was I'm going to go do this with my real neighbors in my real home. And that, I think sometimes it's tempting, maybe even for podcast listeners, especially, to just think about it a lot, you know, listen to an episode and think about the ideas. But I love that you just went immediately from that second sermon you heard and started doing it. That's what we want. And so if you're listening, take David's example and go and eat crow while it's young.
You know, somewhere along in doing that, as I came to kind of, I read more books about neighboring, even listening to your podcast, you know, I realized, wow, this neighboring idea does connect with community development that I'm doing as a career. And so I didn't start doing neighboring in my neighborhood because of that, but I sure, as I went along, saw how it applied. And so I've, you know, been able to take some of those principles and even use my neighborhood a little bit as a test pilot for some things. We do a quarterly newsletter now. We've got a neighborhood Facebook page, experimenting with a few things there to bring people together to build associations, as John McKnight talks about. Getting people connected over shared interest, whether it's bass fishing or whether it's a book club, and putting some of those things into practice. Because it's great, you know, as I do other community development work, I now keep coming back to this whole idea of neighboring locally, you know, because even in community development, people sometimes feel like, what difference can I make? And I'm like, you know, you probably can do very little to change Washington, D.C., maybe nothing at all. There's probably very little you can do to impact your state level unless you have a direct contact with someone. But there is a whole lot you can do to impact your neighborhood, and that can end up impacting your community. I have seen that even in my hometown of Republic, where neighboring gets talked about a lot now.
Yeah.
And it just started by trying to impact our neighborhood. And then other people get interested in it and try and put it into practice. And this can have tremendous positive impacts on your own, you know, neighborhood, your own quality of life, your own community, your own health, helping people overcome loneliness, on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
So it absolutely relates to work. And just from a practical standpoint, I've discovered when I go outside, it is a lot more fun instead of saying, looking at the guy across the street and saying, hey, you, which is, you know, impersonal, or just when I would probably say just, hey, because I didn't know their name. And now to be able to say, hey, Matt, what you doing? What's going on? How's your daughter? Need help in your yard? I mean, it's just, it is a better way of living. And we've done it to ourselves, right? We've gotten away from that. A lot of different reasons, I guess. Big fences, no front porches, garage doors that are automatic, lots of entertainment inside the house. Lots of things that have taken us away from it.
Well, tell us a little bit. I know you've just kicked off a big project to do some stuff there. So tell us a little bit about what you guys were doing this spring.
Yeah. It's been we decided to kick off pilot projects in 8 neighborhoods. I picked 8 that were very demographically different, socioeconomically different. One of them is a Habitat for Humanity neighborhood, in fact. A couple of them have homeowners associations. The rest of them do not. And so we're trying to introduce this topic of neighboring in all of these neighborhoods. Initially here, beginning with the same types of approaches to see what takes off and what may be something we point to in the future and say, okay, this is the best approach. This is the best way to get the concept rolling. Every neighborhood, now these 8 neighborhoods represent 528 homes, and they all get a quarterly newsletter, about 10 pages, all on the topic of neighboring. Columns, classes, programs that we're launching, events, the neighborhood map from Dave Runyon's book, Art of Neighboring, all these things are in that newsletter. That's something we do quarterly. I've tried to develop someone in every neighborhood who I would call the connector, the person who's gonna talk about neighboring, help with some of these projects in their neighborhood. We've gotten some grant funding to host a block party in each of the neighborhoods. That'll probably be later in the summer. We'll see how, you know, COVID, what happens there, I guess. And then, you know, trying to encourage them to come to some of our events to learn more about neighboring. Some are free, some have a cost, maybe scholarship them if they're in these neighborhoods, to see if we can't, you know, make some of these sort of model neighborhoods. We've already found, just with the initial 2 newsletters, that if you don't have someone embedded in that neighborhood, really talking about neighboring and reminding people about it, that it's just not going to get much traction. It's just going to look like something some other organization's throwing at them. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of interest in that type of thing. But when you can provide that local connector, that really helps. For example, in each of those neighborhoods, one of our goals was to create a neighborhood directory. And the directory would include their interests or hobbies with the goal of getting people connected over those interests, those shared interests. And so our initial newsletter that went out, and there was some little bit of media fanfare about this going on. So many people in these neighborhoods would have known that they were part of the pilot. And we had a link in there for them to submit their information for their directory. We mailed to 528 homes, and over the next month, we had zero submissions for the survey directory. Zero.
Yeah.
So we did, so we took half of those neighborhoods and printed out that same information about directory submissions and then hand delivered to doors using the connectors. And so that jumped our participation quite a bit, still not to where we wanted to, but it did jump it in those neighborhoods. One of the neighborhoods immediately, I've got a third, 30% of people that have taken that survey now just by having it delivered to their door or to their hand, however that happened at the front door. But it's all because of that local connector. So it's still going to take some time. They're still going to have to do some talking about that. But obviously the local touch is going to be required. The other thing that continues to interest me is the motivation to get people to go to do neighboring. What is it we can do to really motivate them to do that? I do ask that question a lot. I've asked it of other authors. I've asked it of people with other organizations. The director of NeighborLink in Indiana said to me that he thought the American culture was such a consumer culture now that people need to know what was in it for them. If they were going to neighbor, they want to know what's in it for me. Now, of course, that's not the way I came to the subject, but I was trying to understand other motivations.
Yeah.
And so that one kind of resonated with me. And then as I've read other research and consolidated some of these ideas, to me, it seems like there's maybe four or five main areas that people come into neighboring that motivates them. Seems that some people are motivated to neighbor because they understand there are health benefits to this. There's plenty of research, of course, to back that up. And some people seem to gravitate toward this idea of it's better for my health, it's better for me socially to be neighboring. But that doesn't motivate everybody. You know, you can look at me. I understand what it takes to be healthy, but I actually don't go exercise every day. So I know it, but I just don't do it. But for some people, that's highly motivating. There are times that people seem to be motivated by this idea of overcoming isolation and loneliness or helping their older neighbor across the street overcome that. But that seems to be something they like the idea of being able to help with and do. And so I've heard that from some people. There are some who are motivated because they see the impact this can have on their neighborhood. They're tired of the unmowed yards. They're tired of the lot that is just trashy and the house that's falling down. I mean, there's something like that in their neighborhood that has motivated them to take action and to rally people together. But that usually seems to be over a crisis type of situation or a negative thing, but it has motivated them to take action and they get into neighboring because they see the impact it can have.
Yeah.
There are some folks who are extroverts that just like this whole idea of neighboring is just a party waiting to happen. And this is my chance to throw a block party, and I can't wait to do it. And something I want to do. And which reminds me that, you know, State Farm did a big study back in 2015 called the State of Neighboring.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the interesting contrasts in that is when they ask people about being welcomed to a neighborhood or welcoming new people to a neighborhood, it was like 73% of people said, yes, you should absolutely welcome new people to the neighborhood. But only 16% admitted to ever having done that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I guess we ideally think of what we want to happen. We just don't want to get off the couch and do it, I guess. But
right.
But still some are extroverts and they're willing to do that. And then some people, I think, if we're honest about the subject, some are going to be motivated by Jesus's command to love your neighbor.
Right.
And take that seriously and realize, I mean, in the book of Art of Neighboring, I just came to realize I couldn't say I was neighboring when I was out doing things with people I liked all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, didn't know the names of the people living next to me. That had to start here right next door.
Right.
And for me, that was the motivating factor. But I'm not sure there's just one secret sauce, right? Or one magic bullet that gets this done. I think part of, even after a group I talked to this last week, I'm starting to think maybe the first step toward being cured or the first step toward getting people to neighbor is understanding that we have a problem. Because I'm not sure everyone thinks there's a problem. One of the things I've tried to talk about with churches and with organizations is sort of this five-step approach to the idea of neighboring if you're wanting to get people engaged. I mean, first you have to cast a vision. You have to communicate why this is a problem and why we need to see beyond ourselves, why neighboring is important for the church, for the organization, or the group that you're working with, sort of casting that vision. But then number two, you have to lead by example.
Mm.
You can't be standing up telling everybody, go be good neighbors. And at the same time, you don't know the names of your own neighbors and you're not doing that yourself. So it seems in some of the conversations I've had, it kind of breaks down right there. People see the value, they're interested in it, but they never take the next step and start leading by example. You have to lead by example. And one, it makes your conversation more authentic when you're talking about the subject. But I know for me, wow, I've got a wealth of personal examples. Now, maybe my neighbors wouldn't want me to share all of them. But when people have a question about how to approach that or how to do it, I've got a pretty big pool of personal examples.
Yeah.
And it's still growing. So that makes it more authentic for sure. I think it's important to provide ideas and resources. And there are, great books on this topic. Your podcast is great on this topic. I do a free class every month called Neighboring 101. And we just have guests in and try and be in around this topic, trying encouraging people to take action and doing follow-ups with them. And so you do have to provide some ideas and resources. I think when you can get people to pool together, like in my own neighborhood, when I started learning names and trying to develop those relationships, that was one level. But then when we got organized and a group of us went and cleaned up the park that's right next to our neighborhood, that was a pivotal moment.
Mm.
You form interesting relationships pulling weeds. but it was an opportunity for us to pull together and to meet a need. And then to celebrate stories. People are encouraged when they hear, man, these folks have done neighboring. This is what happened. I've done neighboring. Look at what's meant for my family. You do have to be able to have some celebratory stories to be an encouragement and to kind of continue that loop. This is a great segue for me, Ben, to mention something I think that the neighboring movement nationwide could really grab a hold of as an opportunity for all of us, and that is National Good Neighbor Day, September 28th. You know, it's an actual national holiday. It was proclaimed by Jimmy Carter. There's an official presidential proclamation. This is not just a Hallmark holiday, a reason to go buy cards, and it's not an internet holiday, a reason to post funny memes of your dog or your child or something. I mean, this is an actual national holiday, and it gives us sort of a peg to grab hold of. Maybe it's better to say a stake to put in the ground to say, okay, this is kind of our day. You know, we're gonna plan and do things leading up to that, and it gives a great. Other organizations, libraries, news media, they love stories and things that revolve around a holiday of importance like that, a date of importance. So it's kind of built in around that. We just finished up a week of speakers and doing some things around Won't You Be My Neighbor Day, which is March 20th, and that's Mr. Rogers' birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a good partnership with our library down here. They love the Mr. Rogers connection. We had a thing where people could report acts of kindness. We tried to document 100 acts of kindness challenge, and that led to some great fun on social media and great encouragement. But it also just reminded me that we had National Good Neighbor Day coming up, and that's probably a bigger opportunity. In Greene County, we're about to wrap up getting sponsors for every town in our county. And they're going to be sponsoring a Best Neighbor Award, a cash prize of $250. We're trying to document 1,000 acts of neighboring that week, September 26th to October 2nd. We'll have a panel of judges that will look at all the reported acts of neighboring out of Republic, for example, the city of Republic. And they'll be picking the best example of neighboring that wins the City of Republic Neighboring Award for this year. And we're going to do that in every single town in this county. And putting a lot of, we've got some media sponsorships behind it to really all week to really be talking about this challenge, but also the opportunity it's going to give us to talk about neighboring and the value of that, and have some speakers in and do some other things around that topic. So it's, especially here post-COVID, I think it's our time to shine on this subject. It's an idea whose time has arrived. And nationally, if we were all able to pull together and common discussion around this date, I think there'd be a lot of power in there. Well, it's a, like I said, I've worked in community development for a long time, and I told my boss that two or so years ago, after I'd been kind of convicted about neighboring and doing that myself, that's when it finally clicked for me as far as how this relates to community development. And it so has application for all of our communities and how we interact with people. Learning to get along with people that don't vote the same way or don't have the same ideas. Because if we just pick our neighbors, if we just pick who we're going to associate with, then sure, I'm going to pick people that are just like me, see things the same way, right? But by really focusing on those that live right here next to me, I didn't pick my neighbors. They all moved here. And so I'm going to have interaction with people that I wouldn't normally have interaction with. And the same for them as well. And that is a good thing. That is part of what the strength of American democracy was built on. And we have really forgotten that. That's not a recent phenomenon. That's probably been a 50-year phenomenon to get to this point.
All right, friends. Well, thank you again for joining us on the front porch for this hopefully inspiring conversation for you. I know I'm inspired, ready to take action. And I hope that you'll share this with folks. Let's spread the word, spread the inspiration, and spread the action to get out of our doors, off of our couches, and connect with the people that live closest to us. I want to give a quick thanks to Jenna for her editing work and getting our podcast put together and posted. Also to Christopher Swanson for his work in keeping us organized and on schedule. So thank you to you both. And also a thanks to Brutal Bear for providing our music, which you hear in the background. So that's it for this episode. Until next time, happy neighboring.
Happy neighboring.